Welcome to the Classic City Sports Podcast.
And McAllister down the left field line. Connor Tate is going to round third. He will score. And rounding third is Blaylock. He will score. Pivot downs. Lock it up.
If you're looking for the latest Georgia Bulldog news in football, basketball, baseball, and recruiting, then you are in the right place.
It's third down, Bryce Young's career. You need 10, play clock at 4. From the pocket, launching downfield, underthrown, and intercepted. Kaylee Ringo has an escort down the sidelines. Is going to conquer the Crimson Tide.
Hosted by Jeremiah Stoddard and Jonathan Williams.
Georgia on the mountaintop. Demons be gone and the drought is over. National champions at long last.
Just sit back, relax, and prepare yourself for these hot takes you're about to listen to.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Classic City Sports Podcast. As always, Jeremiah Stoddard and Jonathan Williams. Apologies again for our inconsistent schedules as we keep shifting stuff up as the off-season continues. We're trying to move things around and keep things going, but we want to keep giving you content. So we have a good one for you tonight. Talk about some of the players out in the Senior Bowl, some other things going on around college football. Talk a little bit of Georgia basketball today as well. And just kind of, general conversations. So, Jonathan, how are we feeling?
Good. Don't get used to this either, because it's probably going to switch next week, because next week is Super Bowl Sunday, so definitely will not be doing a show on Sunday. So it's probably going to be a different day next week too. So, but after that, after Super Bowl Sunday comes through, we should be all right for the most part after that. NFL will be done, and we should be able to just kind of coast through the offseason once that hits. But doing good. Excited to just do some, like you just mentioned, some general conversation about Georgia sports. Finally throwing in some basketball. Probably should have done that a couple of weeks ago. I think we gave them a little shout out though, as they I think they got a win in the middle of our show. So I think we did give them a little bit of a shout out. But yeah, we got basketball. They're kind of in the full swing of things, kind of nearing the end of their season. And then we'll have the Diamond Dogs. They're coming up very quickly. Their season should be beginning in probably the next couple of weeks or so. So a lot to be excited about around the University of Georgia and in the city of Athens.
Yeah, that's one I'm excited about too, is getting college baseball back. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's always, it's hard. You go to these games early in the season and it's February, so it's like cold. You're sitting there in the stands and it's like a different environment too. Yeah. But the excitement around college baseball still gets me going every once in a while there. So I'm excited for that to come back around. But Georgia basketball obviously is in a decent spot. They're better than they were the last couple of years, obviously under Tom Green, and now that Mike White's got things, second season, everything like that. So we're definitely going to spend some time today talking about that. But let's go ahead and start off on the main topic real quick in the Senior Bowl. And some top performers, some Georgia players were out there repping the G for the last time and had some good performances, getting some awards and everything like that. So what was your first big takeaway from the Senior Bowl this weekend? Or I guess Ladd from this week, from practices and then the weekend.
Yeah, Ladd is everything that we thought he was. I mean, and more probably. I think I made a tweet about it, but I kind of laughed at the fact of, I think it's so funny that everybody's been so impressed this week with Ladd and his one-on-ones and his route running ability and his ability to beat anybody from the slot to the out wide at the X position or anywhere you put him. Like he was beating his defenders. And I was like, I think that's so funny because that's what the dude's been doing for the last 3 years on a weekly basis against SEC opponents every single week. He's been doing nothing but saucing people up and being a playmaker, which is exactly what it is. And so I just thought it was funny that it's kind of like what happened with Stetson last year in the NFL preseason. Like it took 26 throws in a preseason game and people were like, whoa, maybe this Stetson Bennett dude is actually kind of good.
Yeah, maybe
and then
good.
Now with Ladd against going up against some other seniors, people are like, whoa, maybe Ladd is actually good. Yeah, maybe if you perform really well in the SEC, you're actually really good at football. And it sounded like he made a huge jump in his draft stock. So, and then we also found out how piss poor people's NFL draft comparisons to Ladd Conkey is. Got some pretty lame takes this week.
So, for people that haven't heard, I think I heard you talking with Brooks and your boys on the show the other day, and I think you said he got a first round grade in one of the mock drafts now.
Yeah.
Didn't he? Yeah, that's
I think it's Daniel Jeremiah said that he would be the 31st pick to like the Green Bay Packers or something like that, which doesn't.
Well, he's right there. And then the thing about it, so he's getting that attention after the Senior Bowl week and everything. We know how he's going to perform at the combine. Like, he's going to go out there and show out. We know he's going to run extremely fast. We know he's going to do well in all the other skill position and all the splits and stuff that they do. So I'm expecting his draft stock to be up there at this point. Now you could add him in the list of people that could actually go first round, which is wild, because even a month or two ago, we probably would have sat here and said, I don't know if he's quite a first round guy. You know, it's one of those things that it's hard to say he's going to get up there. But I think what also impacts the first round grade for a guy like Ladd McConkey is what's going to happen ahead of him, right? Like, if a bunch of receivers start getting taken, it just increases his odds of having that late first round pick, kind of like what happened a couple years ago. I know the Falcons took Drake London, and then after that, like, four receivers were taken like in a row. It started a chain reaction. So if something like that happens, it increases his ability to get up there and make some moves there. And I know, talking about your comparisons and everything, I know Jonathan likes to say he's like Cooper Kupp or, Danny Amendola, one of those type of guys, right?
I ought to slap you right through the screen right now. That's not at all what Ladd McConkey is. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Everybody wants to do the, oh, he's Wes Welker. He's a little itty-bitty white wide receiver.
So well, all those.
Danny Amendola. Cooper Kupp is my favorite one, though, because Cooper Kupp ran a 4.62 and is 6'2". Ladd McConkey is maybe borderline 6 feet tall and is going to run like a 4.3 in the 40-yard dash. Those two players can be polar opposites from one another, but everybody wants to do it.
Did you say Ladd was borderline 6 feet?
Yeah.
Is he actually close to 6 feet? I was thinking that man would be closer to like a 5'9". Like, dude,
I'm pretty sure when they did the Senior Bowl measure ins, I'm pretty sure he measured in like right close, either right at 6 feet
really?
Or a little bit under it.
If you have it, you can
5'11". He's 5'11".
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So he's got a little bit more height than I was going to say. I was actually going to come in with a better comparison, like a recent comparison for him as well. But I was thinking he was a little bit shorter. So it's still short, but the weight's probably about the same, probably about 185, right? Somewhere in that range.
Yeah. Let me check that again real quick. The weight. Yeah. 187.
So similar size there. What the comparison that I would like to give him is going to be somebody similar to Zay Flowers. That just came out this last year. That's a rookie in the NFL this year. Had a really good season. Obviously was in a playoff situation, and he had a bad moment in that game against the Chiefs for the Ravens there. But he's 5'9". He's 183, 185 pounds, and he ran a 4.42. I feel like that's the range that if you're going to be talking about Ladd, you got to be getting in. And so my point is, I think he could play a similar role that Zay Flowers is playing, where he's being used in the slot in other ways, running the ball some and doing different things, just kind of shifty and not like a possession receiver like people like to think they are, going back to the Edelman comps and all that kind of stuff. I think he could be used in a similar facet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it was Jacob Hardy that gave this comparison to him on the Players Lounge, one of the episodes that I was watching. He said he kind of likes the Terry McLaurin comp. I don't hate it. I kind of like that one as well. A little scary Terry action. I think that's a good one for Ladd.
He's with Washington, right?
Yeah, what the Washington Commanders.
Yeah.
I think there's quite a few comps. You get definitely a lot of better comps out there than Wes Welker, Danny Amendola, or any of those style of comps. I think those are just lazy and they're lame, and people aren't digging too hard into the nitty-gritty, as they may even want to call Ladd. I don't think they're really digging into that comp. They're not trying very hard at all. So, I mean, glad to see that Ladd was uber successful out there in Mobile. I mean, and his other guy right beside him, Marcus Rasimi-Jack-Saint, that was another guy that started buzzing around. He caught a touchdown during the game from Spencer Rattler. People started raving about him. I think it was Jim Nagy or it was Matt Miller, one of the NFL draft guys, said that Marcus Rasimi went from a guy that was maybe you take him in the seventh round to like, that's a dude you take in the fourth round, maybe even jump him in and put him in the third round now, because he was that impressive and mobile. And plus, like, the thing, and I think Terrence Edwards has said this, and a lot of other people have begun to talk about Rojack in this facet of, like, this is a dude that's going to play in the league for 10 years. You know, he's going to be on an NFL roster for a very long time. He has the willingness to play special teams. He'll block on the outside for you. He'll go play on the hands team, on special teams, like I just mentioned. He'll do all those things for you with no questions asked. And he's super consistent. He had two drops throughout his entire career at the University of Georgia. So a super reliable guy. I mean, different play styles, I would say, but like a Chris Conley. Chris Conley has floated around the league.
Find your spot and go. Yeah,
he has maintained a roster spot this entire time. He's now going to be playing for a Super Bowl for the San Francisco 49ers. That dude has an NFL roster spot since the day he entered the league. I think Rojack is going to be very similar once he gets there.
Yeah, he's the type of guy like that can find his spot, find his place on a team, and stick around. And even if it is as a special teams guy, he's the type of dude that he's done it in Athens since he got here, and he has no problem doing it. If that's what keeps you on an NFL roster, it keeps you on an NFL roster, and then you get your chance at that point to crack the lineup as a wide receiver as well once you're on that roster. And it's a hard roster to make, man. We're talking 53 guys on that roster, and you're talking that roster's only going to have, what, like, eight or nine wide receivers on it max,
maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
If even that, I don't know, but there's only a few spots on that roster for you to crack into, and so yeah, I think that's a good spot. Talking about Chris Conley doing the exact same thing, you know, he's bounced around the league a few times, but he seems to find his place and he seems to be making plays. He's on the Chiefs now, isn't he?
No, he's on the 49ers. He 49ers, was drafted by the Chiefs.
He was drafted by the Chiefs. Well, I was just saying, I remember seeing him this weekend and I got mixed up with which team, because I remembered he got drafted by the Chiefs, but he's played for, what, four different teams?
Yeah, I know he was in Jacksonville for a little bit, and I don't know why I'm blanking on his other team right now. I know that there's another one in there.
Was it the Cardinals?
I don't think it was the Cardinals.
Not the Cardinals. Either way. But I think he was on four different teams so far. Mm-hmm. So he's finding his spot around the league, and that's something that he, Rosemi Jack Saint, can do, Rojack. And it'll be nice to see him in the NFL, because he's a guy that we talked about on this show so many times about, you know, he's so good. He's not necessarily getting the opportunity that he could somewhere else, but he's sticking around and he's doing the work. And that's what you mean when you're talking about find a spot on your roster and be there. And that's what he'll do in the NFL. And I'm excited to see that for sure. Glad to see that he's getting some love this week. That touchdown catch that he had was in the back corner of the end zone too, just going up and getting it. And it was a pretty catch. So I'm excited to see what he can do.
It was a beautiful ball from Rattler, and it was a great catch from, you know, great connection right there for them to be able to get some points on the board and just, you know, kind of leave one last good taste in people's mouths from Rojack of his last, you know, kind of showing in that Senior Bowl moment and a big spotlight. I think we've kind of seen how impactful the Senior Bowl can be for people's draft stock, specifically for players at Georgia. I mean, I think every single player that showed up there certainly increased their draft stock, and people were saying nothing but positive things. I know that there for a little bit early on in the week, and this is one thing that I think you do have to be careful about with these events, especially for people like Javon Bullard and Tyke Smith, not them specifically, but people who are watching the event or paying close attention to the event, is, you know, after day one, I saw a lot of things of like, dang, man, Javon Bullard and Tyke Smith just out there getting cooked, man. And all these one-on-ones, they can't stay with nobody. They're just getting cooked by anybody and everybody. And really every defensive back was just out there getting cooked. I mean, everybody was getting done up and hit up in those one-on-ones. Yeah. And exactly what I was about to say is you see maybe one or two clips from an entire days of practice, and those one or two clips might be Javon Bullard or Tyke Smith getting burnt both times. And so then your view as the viewer is, oh, well, they had a bad day, obviously. Like, that's two clips now that I've seen of him getting burnt. Whereas there may have been 20 other reps stacked on top of that, that maybe he necessarily didn't make great plays, or they didn't necessarily make great plays, but they were in position the entire time. And it just wasn't worthy of me standing there with my iPhone videotaping you and posting it on Twitter to get likes. So, I wasn't able to watch the entire event because it came on during classes for me, so I wasn't able to watch it. But I do know that it certainly seemed like they played better throughout the entire week, because, I mean, Javon Bullard was recognized as one of the top defensive players by his peers, and then Tyke Smith came away with the defensive player of the day for the game for the national team.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to get into next, the award. So Javon Bullard got, throughout the practice week, they're judged by their peers, the wide receivers, running backs, and stuff like that, vote on who the best defensive backs were. And he wasn't the corner. There was a corner and a couple other spots, but he was the defensive safety, the best defensive safety, voted from the other wide receivers and running backs and stuff that they played against. And Tyke Smith was the game MVP for the defensive side of it, and Ladd McConkey was the best wide receiver voted by the other team's DBs or by the DBs at the event throughout the weekend or through the whole week in practices and everything like that as well. So they all stood up and did their job, and especially easy with like Bullard going up in one-on-ones against players where everyone wants to focus on, hey, there was a Florida State player across from him. That's the one that's always going to go on social media, and one play he makes, you know, the receiver or the tight end catches it, makes a play, and it's like, it's a tight coverage play. It's not like he was burned. He was on top. He was on his back when he caught it. Good play by the tight end. And the very next play, you know, he breaks the pass up. So, like, but nobody shows that one as much. They focus on the, hey, the FSU player made the play, so we're going to talk about that instead, you know, going back to the Orange Bowl and all the comments that everybody wants to make there. But overall, I mean, like you said, as a DB, there, you can't break up every single pass. Like, quarterbacks make good throws, wide receivers make good plays. Like, it happens. Like, as long as you don't show me clips of him like 10 yards behind a receiver or something like that, then I'm not going to care too much if they made a play, especially when the entire week shows you that they were playing extremely well.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. This is a completely different setting than it would be if you were actually out there with your entire defense. I mean, you could think about all the years and time spent that Tyke Smith and Javon Bullard spent on Georgia's defense and spent on that defensive field. I think you could probably count on one hand both times that those two players got beat or, you know, got embarrassed or whatever you want to call it for the University of Georgia. So if it happened twice or three times throughout the week and one-on-ones or whatever, which is probably more so designed for the wide receiver to be winning in those situations, I mean, than it is for the defensive back, then they're going to be all right. Like I said, it seems like nobody was saying nothing but positive things about the Georgia guys that were there. I think the only one that didn't actually end up showing up was Cedric Van Pran. Ended up not showing up and participating in the Senior Bowl. But like William Moat and all the other guys, they ended up showing up and having a pretty good week, it seemed like. Oh, and so Dejon Edwards, should have mentioned him too.
Dejon was out there as well. Let's transition a little bit to the next topic on it. So James Cook was you know, making some comments today that kind of got some people's attention. And it's kind of interesting to see a player make a comment like this. And I mean, it's not the first time we've seen it. We've seen it from other teams and stuff like that as well. Make the comment, but I think you got to actually watch the video. I saw something to post about it, but I didn't get to watch the video, so I'll let you take it. But go ahead and give them the quote real quick.
All right, here's the exact quote, I should mention that when you watch the video, it's very clear that they kind of cut up the video and chopped out some pieces in between. So just keep that in mind when you're reading this quote, but this is what the entire video consisted of, the words that James Cook said to USA Today. He said, "We were supposed to be in the playoffs this year. If Georgia in the playoffs this year, we win it all. And I think they didn't want to see us go back to back to back. We lost one game to Alabama in the SEC championship and wasn't beaten the whole season. It was like the same scenario my last year in college. We won every game and lost to Alabama in the SEC championship, but we still got in and went on and won it all. But I still feel like they knew Nick Saban was going to retire, so they tried to sneak him in one." Any thoughts on that, Stoddard?
I mean, I got plenty of thoughts on it overall. One, I love James Cook, and he's balling in the NFL and everything like that. I don't really like – I don't know if he was baited into this comment or something like that. That's the question, because sometimes, like, if you watch, like, the lead-up to videos and clips, sometimes that's what it is, where they're kind of getting you to kind of poke at you and stuff. But I don't necessarily love making the comment, because I'm the type of person that's like, once the season's over, man, we knew going into that game, if Georgia loses, they're not making it. I had that set in my head that once Georgia lost, they weren't going to be in the playoffs. So to me, it's not something that I would have, you know, wanted to go out and say, but I understand what he's saying and where he's coming from. Because like what he said his last year at Georgia, you know, you go out there and, you know, you lose that game, but then you go beat that same exact team for a national championship a month later. So I understand what he's talking about, because obviously, you know, the football team itself was good. They had a bad day, but that's the way football works, man. You have a bad day, that can be all it takes. You know, you get one of them and that's all you got. So personally, I don't love the comment, but it's interesting to think about, like, is that like what people look at it as? Or are they thinking that they pushed him in? Because the way it all sounded with when Saban retired was he didn't even know 5 minutes before. He's doing interviews for a position coach right before he goes and meets with the team and ends up retiring. So I don't think that's true personally, yeah. But who knows? Maybe it was.
I mean, first off, so the question that he was asked was not included in the video in the little YouTube short that USA Today Sports posted. Yeah. So don't know the question that he was asked. But I would also say in a lot of these scenarios where you get like former players answering questions or anything about that, about the season, about their former team or whatever, you know, what are they supposed to say in those situations? You know, like, say the question was, do you feel like Georgia was robbed of the college football playoff spot, James? What is he supposed to say? Hell nah. Like, those dudes suck this year. They didn't need to be in the college football playoff this year. You can't say that about your alma mater. So, of course,
that's
he's going to be in there.
Poked, right? Like, they poke you with the question. They probe you.
They
with
ask the right question.
To get that headline. That's what they do.
Absolutely. So, I mean, James is going to give that type of answer every single time. And I would also say, like, when he was talking about Nick Saban, they knew Nick Saban was retiring. You could kind of tell, like, obviously he's joking when he's saying this. Right. But when I, like today, when I put it in the article, when I put James's quote in that and I block it off, like, you just read the words in however diction or whatever syntax you want to read it in. You don't get the actual emotion or feel for how James said it. You have to go watch the video yourself. So you could kind of tell that he was joking, but obviously being dead serious that he felt like Georgia definitely was robbed, definitely should have been in the college football playoff, and definitely should have been fighting for a three-peat.
They definitely had the argument to be there. You know, obviously the resume was there. The only loss comes to a team that did make the playoffs. It's just, this was the one year where the playoffs in the four seed format that you had five teams that you could justify being in there. And so, you know, some teams had to get left out kind of thing. So it is what it is when it's all said and done. But yeah, I think that's what happened. I think he's kind of probed with it. And, you know, what does he care? He's not on that team anymore. He's not like he's giving somebody bulletin board material or something like that. Like, you know what I mean?
He's just
not
being a DGD, man.
Yeah, he's just supporting his team. So, like, you can't be mad at him for saying it by any means. Yeah. But, you know, neither here nor there. I think it's fine.
Yeah, premium offseason content for sure.
Oh, yeah. I'll take it. It gives us something to talk about tonight, right?
Absolutely. It gave me something to write about.
So let's look at some other stuff. I know I'll go ahead and give you the question that I didn't quite tell you because it works to what we were just talking about. I've seen some stuff come up in a question that was presented to somebody else. I'm not going to name names and stuff like that to give opinions on it, but a question that was presented was the state of college football now, the way with Nick Saban retiring and Jim Harbaugh retiring and the movements that you've seen in coaching staffs and stuff like that. Are those two players or coaches leaving? Is that good for football, bad for football, like college football as a brand, or is it like just indifferent? Because somebody gave, and I'll let you answer it before I tell you what their sentiment was and then my opinion on it as well.
Well, I think it really depends. Like Nick Saban, that's a very different situation than what it is for the Boston College coach who decided to go to the NFL. You know, like Nick Saban, it was a mixture of a lot of different things. Like he mentioned his age, he got to the point where it was a struggle for him to get to a season. And he also talked about how if you're sitting there having a conversation like, well, maybe we'll do it one more time, then that just means you need to go ahead and call it quits now and you need to go ahead and retire. So I think it definitely has a part of – college football, where college football is at today, definitely played a role in Nick Saban retiring. But I think what's bad, or I shouldn't say bad, but I think what's pretty eye-opening and what's pretty you should be a little bit cautious of is the Boston College coach coming out and saying, I am leaving college football because it is simply too much for me. This is not a head coach that was, I can't remember his name, that's why I'm not using his name, but this was not a head coach leaving his program. This was an offensive coordinator. So not even the head man of his organization. This was the offensive coordinator saying, I am leaving college football because this job is too much for me. The calendar year is too much for me to handle. I just can't do it anymore. I'm going to go to the NFL. And you know, this is something that I've talked about. This is something that me and Brooks and Christian have talked about on our show. A lot of people, as you've mentioned, have talked about this topic of college football was entering this time, and Kirby Smart himself has even hinted on this as well, that it's getting a lot to be a college football coach at any type of level, at any position whatsoever. It is a lot to be involved in this game, and it's starting to take some good people out of the game. Like I said, I think it played a role in Nick Saban leaving. It certainly played a role in this Boston College coach leaving, and now you're hearing more about maybe even Ryan Grubb is going to go to the NFL potentially to go to the Seattle Seahawks, or even Chip Kelly might go back to the NFL. So I think it's definitely a little something you need to be cautious of for sure.
So it's definitely something that I think impacts the ability for these coaches to stay in it for the longevity of it, because it's one of those things that it's almost an unsustainable model for coaches in the game, right? Like the model itself is sustainable, but as far as for the coaches and they're being with the team for 20 years, 15 years, like what Saban just did, you know, 17 years at Alabama, it's going to be hard to see other coaches get to that because of the way it is. But let me rephrase, because I think I kind of misled with the direction of the question overall. I like what you said, though. I like it a lot. Let's look at it from this perspective, specifically with Jim Harbaugh and Nick Saban leaving. Those are
you're
two
of the names leaving, huh?
Yes. Yes. I let you go.
I'll take blame for that. Honestly, I'll take blame for that. I probably had something preset in my head anyway, so I just went with it. But
let me rephrase it in this sense too. Like those two people, is it good? Like let's think about like the viewership of college football, the brands that they are, right? Those two brands losing their head coach, where one is obviously the best coach of all time and had a dynasty going recently, and the other one that just won a national title. Losing those coaches, those teams theoretically are taking a step back this year, right? Like everybody's going to say that those teams are going to take a step back. Is it good for college football as a whole? In the sense of you might be able to bring more viewers from other teams, other coaches being able to kind of come up. Is it indifferent? You don't think it's really going to impact the viewership of everything? or is it bad for football because those two teams are going to be down? They're going to lose potentially viewers and stuff for college football and that, then the, as the product itself.
I got you. I'm following you now. You know, I would say, you know, maybe 3 years ago, I would say, yeah, like this is not good. The fact that, I mean, just Nick Saban leaving alone, I think obviously that might hinder some type of marketability of college football or anything like that. But I mean, let's be realistic about it now of Texas is on the up and coming. That's arguably the biggest brand in all of college football. I mean, everybody, Texas is one of those household names. And then even Oklahoma just joining the SEC, that's going to do wonders for them as well. And then you can say what you want about Michigan. And I know Jim Harbaugh himself, you know, he likes to give these flashy quotes and these quotes that are clickbait material and everybody gets engaged about it and he gets people all riled up or whatnot. But under Brady Hoke, Michigan was a mediocre football program and nobody gave two craps that they were a mediocre program. It didn't do anything bad for the college for college football. And I don't think Michigan is going to be a mediocre program under Sherrone Moore. But Jim Harbaugh, obviously a big name going to the NFL. That's probably where he belongs anyways. But I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, Georgia being where it is now, I mean, everybody, I mean, whether you hate them or you love them, everybody wants to talk about Georgia. Everybody's going to start talking about Texas. I mean, I think you have enough college football programs that are kind of building themselves back up that it's okay. And it's probably the right time for Alabama and Nick Saban maybe to stoop back down just a little bit and for Michigan to have their 5 seconds in the sun and then burn out and flash out. And now maybe Ohio State, Ryan Day, and or Dan Lanning and the Oregon Ducks can really start popping themselves back in this top five conversation or whatnot. So I think you have enough college football programs that are on the up and coming or have already established themselves as top tier programs that it's really going to be okay. I mean, I think college football is going to be fine.
See, all right. So their perspective on it was the opinion that they gave was that it's actually going to be better for college football as a whole and like the viewership part of it because it gives the opportunity for another team, another coach to really elevate themselves and hopefully and maybe bring more viewers to the sport because it's a team from a different school that necessarily didn't have the biggest following and all of a sudden they can get into the spotlight, make the playoffs, go win a championship, and all of a sudden they got more fans around them. My opinion is kind of along what you were just talking about is I actually don't think it hurts nor helps. I think it is indifferent. I think it's obviously going to take a step back for Bama overall, but Bama's not losing fans for it, right? Those fans are still going to be there and watch every, you know, Saturday. Michigan's the same way. They're not going to stop supporting their team. So those two teams aren't taking a step back. All you're going to see is what you're talking about. Now we're going to have a Steve Sarkisian, a Dan Lanning get in that conversation with Nick Saban. And all you're going to do is you're going to have two coaches that are decent, good coaches that already have the following with their fan bases take over that spot, right? You still got Ryan Day at Ohio State. So it's like not even like the Big Ten is going to take a dip overall. They still have a team and now they've got Oregon and other teams coming in. I think it's just the same. I don't think it makes an impact either direction because it's not going to be like you're going to have a team from, you know, you're not going to have UCLA all of a sudden have a coach that comes in and just brings that program to a top four type team immediately or in the near future. I think those programs aren't going to be really good in general. So it's not really going to change anything. But that's just my sentiment on it. I think the game itself actually stays pretty much the same as far as the trajectory of viewers. Even though like Bama fans are going to hate that he's gone, you know, Michigan fans are going to hate that Harbaugh's gone. I just think that the coaches that are still like what you would consider tier two coaches, like behind your Kirby Smart and Nick Saban and maybe Jim Harbaugh at the time, those coaches are now going to step up and be up there where it's Nick Saban, Steve Sarkisian, Dan Lanning. Coaches like that, and it's somebody else is going to take the spot that's already in the spotlight with their team.
Yeah, I just don't see like, you know, head coaches having this big of a pool, honestly, about like who's engaged with college. Like you either love college football or you're an NFL fan who thinks it's lame and stupid and that nobody should watch it. You know, you fall into one of those two umbrellas or you're also in the other categories. Like I really just don't care, to be honest. But, you know, every coach has to go through these cycles of legends retiring and they still continue to succeed. I mean, Bill Belichick, he's not going to be coaching the NFL this next year. It looks like the NFL is going to be fine. Which, you know, the NFL is king and they're going to have great ratings no matter what. You could have toddlers coaching those teams and people are going to tune in. Millions and millions of people are going to tune in every single week to watch their NFL teams. But, you know, like when the NBA, when Greg Popovich officially has to go on and have his departure, that sport's going to be fine. Coach K, when he left, I mean, the sports are going to live on. Eventually, these legends are going to come and go. And you know what? That might kind of hinder these programs, and it might hinder their successes for a little bit. And they might not be the standard that you love them for, or the standard that you are accustomed to them being for the longest time. But the sport overall is going to continue to adapt. Someone's going to step into that spotlight, and then it's going to be someone else that you talk about like this. And when they leave the game, you're going to be like, whoa, does this hurt college football now that Kirby Smart is no longer coaching? You know, the game will transition, the game will adjust.
And I think that's a very good point, because we've seen it in other sports. So why would it be different in college football and other sports? We've seen these legendary coaches take a step back and or you know, retire. And those sports obviously don't have a change. I don't think they improve because all of a sudden now there's another coach out there that can go and win a championship. Now, it doesn't hurt to have local fans a little bit more excited. But if those fans come on just because your team's like winning a national title and they're cheering for it, then, well, if you have a bad year, they're going to not give a crap anymore. You know, it's those are going to be your up and down fans anyways. That's not going to grow the game. It might impact that season for a little bit. That might impact the viewers of that specific team for a little while, but not necessarily the overall impact of college football. And even if you were to go look at like Michael Jordan retiring, right? When he retired, he's a player and he was on one of the best runs you've ever seen. And that didn't impact basketball when he left, right? Like LeBron James is, you know, the best player playing right now and one of the arguably the best players of all time as well. When he retires, basketball is not going to take a step back because he's not playing anymore. Those things I don't think they impacted either. So I think the game stays right where it's at.
I'm not going to speak on MJ. I was not old enough to understand anything what was going on then, so I'll keep my mouth shut on that one. But point being
that like the brand itself of basketball, you know, like it wasn't like I use a better, obviously the current time stuff talking about like,
well, LeBron, you know, that might be a good comparison. I think that's kind of how people view Nick Saban and Kirby Smart already. I think that is kind of how people view it. Of, you know, Nick Saban being the Michael Jordan, and maybe Kirby Smart is going to be this LeBron James figure of. I think when they both hang it up, you're going for the eternity of time. You're going to have this argument of probably people saying Kirby Smart's the GOAT or Nick Saban's the GOAT. Now, one side might be super ignorant in their thinking, which we could probably guess which side that might end up being. It's going to take a lot for Kirby Smart to get him into that realm of thinking, but
it
could potentially happen. You know, it very well could become that.
Yeah, it's going to take some time for him to get there. And it's the same conversation that like we're looking at. I know this is kind of segueing, but I'm a little ADD, so I go on different topics like that. But I mean, the conversation's already starting up right now about Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady and like where they're at. And Patrick Mahomes hasn't won his third yet. Now, he's playing for a third one real quick. He could win a third one this weekend, and he'd be on track for what Tom Brady did in his career. But when you're talking about a guy that's got seven rings versus a guy that's got two, which is Nick Saban and then Kirby Smart, you can't quite compare them yet, right? Like I can say that Kirby Smart is the best active head coach, but it is going to take, you know, I would say it's going to take at least two more national championships for me to really be able to say, oh, he's on the track for it right now. Because, you know, what if Kirby Smart takes a step back and now with the 12-team playoffs, it's a little bit harder to get to where you're trying to go. You make the playoffs more often, but you got more games to play to get there. You know, I think you got to see him win two more to get up to that conversation to where now let's talk about it. So that's when I look at like Patrick Mahomes, I need to see him win, you know, two more for me to be like, all right, now he's really on the track for it, in my opinion, to be able to get there. That's just how I think about it. But also shouts to Dan and Harrison. We appreciate the invite to your house tonight as well. Thanks for that.
Tom Brady's the Bill Russell of the NFL. You heard it.
Wow.
Just kidding. I told my buddy who's a Patriots fan. Man, I texted him the other day and I was like, Tom Brady's just Bill Russell, bro. He just won a bunch. He's not the most talented. He's not the greatest to ever play. He just won a bunch. He's just Bill Russell. And so I just said, you know, any of the Tom Brady fans that we have listening, if we have any, just keep that in the back of your mind.
I think it's, I think it's like if Patrick Mahomes, I will say this with to go along with what you're saying. If Patrick Mahomes does get up there where he's got like 5-6 championships, I would say like the talent level, like if you watch the two of them play, like, and I guess that's a little bit ignorant saying, going back to like the time of it. Like I did watch Tom Brady a long time ago, obviously, but I was younger and maybe the recency bias of it shows me how good Patrick Mahomes is like still, and he's in his prime right now. So that's a little different than looking at Tom Brady as he's finishing up his career. It's interesting there. All right. So let's talk about this one more football topic and then we can go on to basketball for the night and wrap the show up. So the NCAA and Tennessee are going at it again. And I don't want to necessarily get into the Tennessee problem overall, right? Yeah, deja vu. We just talked about this, 2 years ago? Like, and they were already in it. So the difference this time, though, is last time, Tennessee was inviting them in there to get rid of Pruitt because they wanted to get rid of that coach without having to pay the buyout. This time, they don't want to get rid of their head coach. This time, they want their head coach to stay. And this time, they're putting middle fingers up to the NCAA. That's what I want to talk about more than the actual problem itself. Because the problem is, you know, you can debate certain things, and they came out with a huge statement against the NCAA, right? But this is what I was thinking about. Actually, I was listening to you and Brooks and y'all talk about this the other day. And like the topic that the reason I brought this up today is because I wanted to add to it was, obviously they're going to get they're going to get in trouble for what they did. And like, they made that huge statement. It doesn't change the fact that they did something that everyone knows you cannot do. And they're trying to like say, well, you've got all these rules changing, all this stuff going on, and you're trying to enact old rules that are different now, the NIL, all that stuff. My point that is, I was waiting. We talked about this a couple years ago as well. I was waiting for a team to look at the NCAA in the eyes and say, no, sorry, we don't want, like, screw you. Mm-hmm. You're just, you know, a random name out there. You're not actually doing what you need to be doing in college football overall. We're going to do what we want to do, and you can get out of here. That's the thing is, what impact do you think that's going to have on college football? I guess the impact it's going to have on college football depends on what the result is of this situation. If the NCAA comes out right now and just puts the hammer down and says, no, you can't just say, screw you, this is what's going to happen, and it goes that way. Or if the NCAA just kind of says, okay, and steps back and lets it go, then nobody's going to respect the NCAA, even though they already don't really in the first place.
Yeah, you know, I think it's pretty significant that this is going on. And then also you got this news about Big Ten and SEC administrators like banding together to like help save the game. That wasn't the phrasing that they used, but basically it's what it sounded like. They were trying to help guide college football to a better direction, which people viewed that. And they read the cute little headline that they put on whoever's graphic it was or whoever tweeted the article or whatever. And where they're like, ha ha, NCAA, they're coming after you. We're going to shut you down. We're going to get ourselves a commissioner. But what they didn't read is the actual article that stated that they were the group that's banding together is fully invested in the NCAA still. Like they were still connected with it. They want to work with the NCAA and they want to help them out. Maybe these two events are connected a little bit. Like maybe the SEC and the Big Ten were like, this isn't a good idea if programs are going to start doing this because it's not going to work out for us. And I agree with that. If that is their line of thinking, I don't think it's a good idea for programs to just say like, well, screw you, we're just going to keep doing what we want, because once they do it, then Michigan's going to turn around and do the same thing when their investigation continues. And like, screw you, we'll keep on cheating because we don't respect you. We don't think that you have any sort of say in this conversation. Right. Whatever. You want to do whatever you want, but you have no effect over us. And it's just going to continue to pile. I think that's where we get in this conversation of college football is in trouble. Yeah. So mute point there. But so, you know what, if Tennessee, if you want to do that, that's fine. If that's the direction you want to go in, have at it. But also, like you said, that they didn't really invite them into this time. Like they didn't, in the sense that they didn't like ask them to come investigate them to get rid of a head coach. But I think they dang near came close to it. I mean, because they were the ones that wanted to leak this. Oh, well, we paid this player who we're not going to name $8 million.
The one five-star in our entire recruiting class.
Who we just signed not too long ago, $8 million. You mean Nico, the one five-star that's in your recruiting class right now? Like, not hard to bring two and two together. That was basically saying like, hey, come on and investigate what we got going on and come see how deep our pockets are and see what we got going on around our programs. I think it's just another case of Tennessee. You're being way too loud about what you got going on. Look at everybody else. Nobody's being loud about spending their money except maybe Texas A&M. And they were being loud about money that they weren't even spending because they weren't even paying their players, it sounds like. So just pipe on down, be the borderline upper tier, mid tier SEC program that you are, and just keep on thriving. Like, what are we doing, man?
Yeah. And then they do that. And then obviously the NCAA knows to like pay attention to the Nico recruiting cycle, right? So they're going, okay, if you're willing to do that with him, what would you might have done? And guess what they found? A private flight from, you know, California to Tennessee and back for recruiting. And then he signs after that. So that's pretty freaking telling that you did something at that point. And that, my friends, is against the rules. You cannot do that. Like, that's how it works. I will say
the NIL money, Stoddard, so it's legal.
The NIL contract that Nico signed, I don't know if you know this, it's actually really interesting the way they did it with the collective. So like all of his deals that he got is that it's, they give it to him, but any extra NIL deal and stuff, it all goes back through the collective. And so like if he were to go to a different school, they still get his NIL money. it to pay up that money that they gave him, essentially. Like, they actually did that the right way, in the sense that, like, he couldn't just trade, like, leave and take the money and go. Like, yeah. His NIL money at a different school would still go through the collective at Tennessee, which is insane.
Good for them. They figured that one out.
They did. They finessed that situation. They really did. And they set the market for what quarterbacks cost in college football now, about $2 million, $1.5 to $2 million, depending on the quarterback.
They set it way high.
But they set it high and they set it early. That was the thing. Yeah, they did it before anybody else was doing it. But I think going back to the conversation about the NCAA, and I think what's going to be more likely to happen than seeing the NCAA do something soon, because obviously they don't do anything fast. How long ago was the Jim Harbaugh, like, hamburger? Was like 2 years ago?
Yeah, it was around COVID time.
Yeah, it was like 2 years ago, and that's not done yet. They haven't finished that. That's still going on. That's the point I'm making. So I think what you've got a more likely scenario when you're talking about the SEC and the Big Ten joining together and saying, "Hey, we've got to protect college football, and we've got to have our little group alliance of we're going to work with the NCAA and get it going." What that tells me is Greg Sankey is going to be knocking on the door in Knoxville saying, "What the crap are y'all doing? You can't be doing this crap. You can't say screw you to the NCAA. This is everything. And I'm telling you, because are you going to tell me to screw off? I'm like, you can't play without me for sure." Like, I think that's more likely a scenario that you get is Greg Sankey saying, "Hey, buddy, we're going to punish you then," which is basically, you know, like the Big Ten punished Jim Harbaugh directly. The NCAA hasn't done anything on that. Like, the Big Ten did it.
Yeah.
So I think that's the more likely scenario of how it plays out, is the SEC is actually going to try to do something for the greater good of college football and say, "Hey, this isn't good for the brand. This isn't good for, like, you overall. Like, I promise you, it's not going to go well, and it's not good for the SEC."
Yeah, you know, everybody wants laws until they're enforced upon themselves. And then everybody's like, "Screw the laws. Screw these lawmakers. They're just preying on our downfall."
We all got speeding limits are all important and stuff. And we laugh when we see somebody pulled over on the side of the road. Like, somebody goes flying past you, right? And then you see them pulled over like 2 miles later. You're like, "Ha, got them." But you're sitting there cruising, you know, 5-10 miles an hour over, and you see a cop going, "Oh, crap, 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 crap. Please don't pull me over. Please don't pull me over.
I wasn't even speeding."
When it's you, it's a little different. But
you mean to tell me I was going 40 over? I had no idea. Didn't even know. Wasn't even paying attention.
My bad, officer. I wasn't paying attention to that.
Just let me off with a warning this time, you know?
But that's how it is. That's what they want. Like, you get caught in it, and obviously it's a problem then. But, like, if another school around you is doing it just as loud, you're probably going to want them to do something about it too. Because especially when you're talking about, like, Nico, going back to what I just said, you set the quarterback market for the entire, like, NCAA, like, every single team.
Honestly, they screwed themselves, really.
You did. You screwed yourself, but you screwed everybody else. So you think other teams and people are going to be supportive of you for this? Why would they? Like, you were too loud, man. Chill out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now any 5-star that comes knocking through your building, they're like, "Well, we know it took for you to get Nico in here, so time for you to pay up for me if you want me here."
Yeah. That's exactly what I think is going to happen to him. Like, it's going to be a double-edged sword. Yeah, it worked for you this time, but it's going to get you on the back end too. So that's the thing that you see all over. That's the argument I have across college football in general, looking at, like, different schools everywhere. All right, well, you're willing to pay this player this much to come to the school that I'm already at. I'm a star player. Where's my money? Give me my money. Or I'm going to go somewhere else because that's the transfer market. I can go get that money somewhere else. If you want me to stay, then pay me. That's the kind of stuff that comes up from it as well.
Absolutely.
All right. So you got anything else to add to the college football part before we switch over?
Nah, I'm good. I'm straight.
All right, I'm going to kick it over to you. Bring us all up to date on what's going on with Mike White in Georgia as we're getting closer to March Madness here in a couple weeks.
Yeah, so the big thing right now, I know that we were talking about this with Dan in the group chat, but he was like, "What the heck is a quad one win? What does all this mean? Like, I don't understand." In layman terms, it means basically if you get a quad one win, that means it is helping your stock of potentially entering into this March Madness realm of you are a tournament team. So if you hear them say, like, this will be a quad one win for Georgia, that means they're in quad one of these teams in college basketball. Of, like, these are the really good teams. Like, that's a really good win. Anyways, so Georgia had quite a few opportunities recently of getting these quad one wins. Yeah. You know, they played Tennessee, who's a top 15 team. They played Alabama, who was ranked number one in the SEC as well. They played Kentucky. They had a game against Florida, and then they recently had a game against South Carolina. they're on quite a skid right now. A lot of those games they probably should have won. Like Tennessee probably should have won that one. Alabama should have won that one. You were up against South Carolina at halftime. A lot of these were home games as well. Those three I just listed off were home games. It's really just gotten to the point of like this team just has to learn how to close. They've got to learn how to close out games. And I mentioned this on our show last week of – and I think this is kind of where you get into a little bit of trouble when you bring in a lot of transfer portal guys. It's kind of the meat and the heart of your team. These are guys that have never played before. And they, you know, every single game they're learning how to play with one another. And you're getting into this point in the season where they should know how to play with one another. But you might have some deficiencies on your team that others aren't having to deal with right now because you really don't have that continuity that most do. I don't think it's a major problem. I think the players that Mike White did get from the transfer portal, like Noah Thomason, RJ Melendez, Tachua, I think, or that's not even how you say his name. I think it's, but Russell T, I'll call him Russell T. Yeah. Anyways, I think those are big contributors. Obviously they've really helped Georgia out this year. So it's hard to say like, don't go in the portal. I think the biggest thing that fans need to take away from the season is the fact that March Madness is even in the conversation of in the realm of thinking for Georgia basketball fans. That's a win on its own, man. I mean, 2 years ago, Georgia won six games under Tom Crean. The program was a complete dumpster fire. He left it down to the bare bones, and Mike White had to come in and basically build it from the ground up to where it is now. And what is Georgia now? They're an entertaining basketball team that is competitive in every single game that they play. And people look forward to sitting down and watching them on Wednesdays and Saturdays. We didn't have that 5 years ago. We didn't have that 2 years ago, but we have that now. And we have a team that is continuing to get better. You have a team that has a five-star committed in the upcoming recruiting class that is going to come and play in with some of these core guys that you have. A guy that is getting it done on the recruiting trail, getting guys like Blue Kane and Silas Demery Jr., who have both been meaningful contributors to this basketball team. Everything about this program tells you they're only going to keep getting better. Sure, you might miss out on the tournament this year because you had a rough skid there in the middle of the season. Still got some opportunity left on the schedule, but it looks like you're probably going to miss out. You might make the NIT tournament, and that would be a win of itself, but this program is going to continue to improve, and Georgia has the right hire. So I think that's just the perspective that fans need to maintain as they finish up the year.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is like everybody was looking at this season as so much better. You know, 2 years under Mike White, all of a sudden you were rolling. You get into SEC play. You know, the first four games or so, you win like three of them in the SEC play, and so you're moving right. You've got a couple big wins, you know, out of conference up to this point. And then all of a sudden you start to like the big games that are notable are the ones you're talking about as well. I mean, when you got Alabama and you're up by a ton against Alabama in that game.
17-2 at one point, I think.
Yeah, you're up by a ton, and you're up late still. You're up late for a while, and then it flips on you, and you got to win that game. That's a huge win. I mean, that's a massive win. That's the top team in the SEC. You got to win that game when you have them like that. And then I just blanked for a second. Tennessee, you're up in the second half. You're up by like 9 or 10 points as well. You got to win that as well. When you're in the second half and you've got a double-digit lead or like right around a double-digit lead, you got to be able to win those games. At home, you got to win those games. So when you end up losing those games, then you start feeling a little bit like, dang, like we got to be able to get those big ones in. We got to get the ones that you should win. And I know those teams aren't necessarily one you should win, but you get into a moment of the game where now you should win. You got to be able to do it. So I think moving forward, Georgia's got 9 games left before March Madness time and everything like that. 3 of those games are against teams that are better than you. 3 of them. You got Auburn twice, and you got Ole Miss. Those 3 teams are better statistically than you record-wise and everything like that. The other 6 games are teams that are like maybe better than you by like 1 win or just right at your level or a little bit below. Like you're right there. You got 6 games that you need to go win at least 4 or 5 of those games so you can afford to lose a couple more as well. So win the games you're supposed to win, and this team could be, you know, they'll be seated in a decent spot in the SEC tournament. You do well in the SEC tournament, and then you can punch your ticket into March Madness. That's what they got to do.
Yeah, I think you definitely entered the portion of you've definitely entered the section of you've got to beat Florida. You've got to avenge that loss. Definitely at least got to steal one from Auburn. You got to win one of those games, and you take care of business the rest of the way. And then you also probably got to make something shake in the SEC tournament. Like you got to make a pretty significant run in the SEC tournament.
You can't be out in round 1 or 2.
Yeah, to really solidify yourself as a tournament team. But hey, that, like I said, that's okay. I know that this is kind of what people would say was the Achilles heel of Mike White during his time at Florida, you know, like not being able to finish the job, get the job done, finish the drill, as Kirby Smart or a lot of football coaches would like to say. And, You know, while that may be true, maybe that is his Achilles heel. Maybe that continues to be an issue for Georgia under Mike White. I'm not going to go ahead and plaster that on his forehead and say, like, this is who you are now, like in Athens or anything like that. I think if anything, next year, if this continues to be a problem and next year you continue to kind of have these deficiencies where you're not really finishing the job, you're not really closing it out, when you have a great roster, like there are no holes on this roster and you basically got every single guy on the roster that you wanted, then we can start having this conversation of like, okay, maybe this is just who Mike White is, but hey, it's still better than where we were. This is still a great basketball program. So he's going to have you as a competitive basketball program. And what if Georgia basketball fans had always said, like, just have us in contention for the tourney. Like, that's all we want. We just want to be in contention to play in March Madness every single year. And Mike White's doing that in year two. And if this is what it continues to be, then I think Georgia fans are going to be happy enough with those results. As long as you get to the tournament, you just got to get to the tournament, give them that taste of it again. And I think that we'll be crusading. And like I said, I think Mike White was a tremendous hire. He's continuing to be a great hire and he's got this program in a great standing.
Listen, I mean, he's got, like, he went out and got all the guys through the transfer portal to get his team from being a 6-win team when he took over to being like borderline a tournament level team. So he had to go out and build a lot through the transfer portal. He did that. He did pretty well with that. He went out and he got some recruits there. Now, next year, you got some bigger names coming in as recruits go. And the way basketball works, you need one superstar on your team and then some role players around them. I mean, you get one superstar and then the good role players around you, and you can be a very competitive team, especially in college basketball. And right now, Georgia doesn't have a player on their team averaging more than 14 points a game. So you don't have a star on your team. You don't have somebody out there scoring 20 points a game or something like that. So it's a team effort. He's built a solid squad of guys that work well together, play well together, and can win games. But he doesn't have a guy out there necessarily that you're saying, all right, well, we need 2 points. This is the guy that the ball should be in their hands. We don't necessarily have that name. You know, like say you could fast forward, rewind a couple years. You had an Anthony Edwards on this team. If you were to say have an Anthony Edwards on this team.
If Mike White was coaching Anthony Edwards, it'd have been a lot better.
That's my point. Like he's got to go out. And I'm not saying he's got to go get the number one overall draft pick, but he's got to go get a guy that is going to be, you know, a top draft pick, somebody that's going to potentially be a one and done and go. Like that's what he's got to get. If he had Anthony Edwards, this team would be a tournament team. They would, because they are playing so well without having the star, and they're playing, you know, team basketball, which is great, but maybe in those situations you need somebody to be able to take over a game and win it for you. You don't necessarily have it right now.
Well, you don't have it now, but you're going to have it next
year. You're
going to
have it next year.
Asa Newell is going to be that. I mean, that is what you get an Asa Newell for. That's a stretch big, can shoot it, can score down low, can play defense. I mean, that guy does it all. And I know he's the only commit right now in the class, but they're going to get some other guys. I'm sure Mike White, it's all according to who is going to come back. Like, I know Jabri Abdur-Rahim could come back for another season for Georgia. That'd be a massive returnee for them. And if they could get both Blue Kane and Silas Demery and a couple other guys to return for another season, then you'll kind of have a better idea of what your roster is going to be. And you can kind of decide based off of that who you want to go get and who else you want to add to the class. But just having Asa alone by himself in that class, it's really going to help elevate Georgia to another level next year. And they should be really dang good next year.
Well, if you put same conversation that was just having, if you put Asa on this team and then all of a sudden you've got a lot better, like that one player, we're talking about basketball, man. You got five guys on the court at a time. It's not like, you know, football, you got 11 starters on both sides of the ball and everything has to be clicking for everybody to be working. Like in basketball, you can have some role players around a guy like him and he can come in there and do it. So maintain your roster like you're talking about, bring him in. And next year, you probably are a tournament-level team, and you should be. At that point, I think Georgia expectations, fans' expectations next year should probably be that next year we should be in the tournament. Like, we should be a tournament team. I'm not saying you got to go win the SEC or something like that, but next year, with everything, the buildup that you've created, you know, year three, you should be able to be a tournament-level team moving forward. This year, you know, you got to give yourself some time still. He's still building it. But next year, that's where expectations are going to go. And I'm not necessarily saying that's the most fair thing in the world, but I think that's where expectations are going to be for him next year.
No, I mean, I think that's what Mike White would agree with. I think that by year three, that's what he expected of himself, that this should be a tournament-level basketball program. And I think he's got it heading exactly in that direction. You got anything else you want to add in, Stoddard?
No, I'm good.
Alrighty. Well, we went over 50 minutes. I don't even know the last time we went over 50 minutes. Maybe it wasn't too long ago. Maybe I'm just not thinking straight. But we gave you plenty of content, a lot of different topics, a good number of topics to talk about for an off-season show. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. Again, next week, not going to be on Sunday because it's Super Bowl Sunday, so probably going to shift it over to Wednesday or something like that. We will get you guys another show next week. We're going to keep bringing you guys these. So we appreciate everybody coming and joining in tonight, whether you are joining and watching with friends at someone's house or you're watching it alone by yourself in your bed. We appreciate all of you guys for tuning in tonight. Like and subscribe if you haven't already. We are closing in on 500 subscribers, is it? 500 yeah. subscribers. We're closing in on that. I think it's 21 away. So you could be one of 21 people to help us get to 500 subscribers. So do that if you haven't already. Keep supporting us. We appreciate you, all of you guys, for tuning in. As I just mentioned, there's the social media handles if you want to make sure that we are indeed going live next week on Wednesday. As I just said, there's all the social media profiles. You can find that information at one of those three locations eventually. So just keep up to date there. Follow us if you haven't already. And Stoddard, you can close us out.
Hey, as always, keep it classy in the Classic City. We will see you next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Classic City Sports. Take a second to subscribe, rate, review, and share with your friends and family. Feel free to reach out to the Classic City Sports Crew on Twitter with any topics you'd like discussed. You can reach out to Jeremiah at The Stodfather, to Jonathan at Dr_JWill, and make sure to follow at Classic City Pod for show updates. Check back next week for a brand new episode. In the meantime...
Express the sentiments of the entire Bulldog Nation.